Hi, this is Naved with StatementGuru.com, which is the internet's preferred destination for admissions essay expertise. I'm with Wei-Li Sun of AskMissSun.com. Wei-Li, hi, how are you doing today?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks for being on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Can you briefly tell us what AskMissSun.com does? What do you do through this your site?
Absolutely. So I'm a UC admissions expert. I primarily work with students, either high school students or students who are attending community college who are interested in attending one of the University of California campuses. Of course, Berkeley and UCLA are the top choices for many of the students in California. And my expertise is in helping students craft a strategy and helping them find their way to the UC campuses of their choice. I specialize in the UCs because I myself attended UC Berkeley as an undergrad, and then I spent a year at UCLA in a PhD program before leaving, and I have also done a college counseling certificate through the UC San Diego Extension Program.
For one of my blog posts, I looked up the most applied to schools in the country, and UCLA was number one, and there was 8 California schools in the top 10. So I think with that, under that context, what you're doing in terms of the UC system makes a lot of sense, in that there's this insane demand, not just to get to the top ones, but to almost to get into all of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, California is a large state and we do have a fairly large system. You know, there are 9 undergraduate campuses in the UCs and, gosh, I think 23 or 24 for the Cal State system. And it's still barely meeting the demands. So, yeah, we have a lot of students and also a lot of out-of-state students are very interested in our colleges as well.
I think as for a public school system, it's very atypical in that there's a lot of national and international demand for these schools, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but you know, we do have a very, very good system. You know, Berkeley and UCLA are certainly very well known for a lot of different fields and disciplines, and they have conducted research and numerous different types of awards and honors in different fields.
As I was saying, that there's this unprecedented demand and these applications coming into these schools. So it's kind of creating a crunch or this anxiety, it seems like, in these applicants who are trying to get into these schools, more so than ever before, because I've seen the admissions rates and they just are plummeting in the past few years. So a service like yours is invaluable in helping these applicants navigate this system.
Yes. And there are, I think students and occasionally parents as well, you know, are confused about what it means to be college ready. And so there are unfortunately a lot of misinformation. There are a lot of rumors. There are a lot of accurate information being misinterpreted by well-intentioned people. And so, you know, there aren't a lot of good, accurate information out there in terms of how students should prepare for college, specifically for the UCs, and what they need to do in order to make sure they are well prepared. So one of the things that I'm trying to do with my website and my blog is to provide that information, dispel the misinformation, and really give students and parents actionable items so that they know when they follow my advice that they are making sure that they're well prepared.
And are you seeing an increase in demand in your services year to year?
Absolutely. Students, you know, I think particularly because the admission rates are dropping, partly because of the continuing issues with the California state budget. And as I'm sure you're hearing now in the news that there are a lot of debate about the amount of money that the UCs are receiving from the state. But, you know, parents and students are becoming a lot more stressed out about the college admission process. And more students and more parents are realizing that it's not ideal to go, you know, have a go at this and just relying on luck. So having someone who understands the process, who understands what needs to be done in order to adequately prepare the student for college has become increasingly more important for parents and students.
I think one good, for those of us who actually already have UC degrees, one good thing is it makes our degrees that much more valuable. So it's not comforting for people who are trying to get their UC degrees, but...
Well, just think, it's like real estate, right? It appreciates in value over time.
Exactly. I went to UC Santa Barbara, which is, as a Berkeley person, you probably look down upon that a little, but I think it was still a pretty good education.
Not at all. Santa Barbara is well known for a lot of different disciplines, and you know what? As far as views are concerned, you can't beat the ocean view from. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it's funny because I did film studies at UC Santa Barbara, which is, it's a school on the beach, and the major's film studies. And it was actually incredibly difficult. Like, it's, there was even an LA Times magazine article cover story around the time that I went there about how difficult the program was or is. And, but when I tell people I did film studies at UC Santa Barbara, nobody takes it that seriously in terms of the difficulty level, so...
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of, I think, misconception and skewed perception about, you know, what college campuses are good for, what majors. And ultimately, I think at the end of the day, it's really up to the student to put in the time and the effort to make sure they're receiving the education that's going to help them in their future. And the film program at Santa Barbara actually is really well regarded. So, you know, it's unfortunate that there are some people who don't feel that way, but I think at the end of the day, Naved, you know what you got out of UC Santa Barbara, and I think that's the most important thing.
That brings me to an interesting question, which is, you know, a lot of times people are concerned about prestige or, you know, the name, the brand name of the school, and it seems like sometimes they'll pick that over the major in a particular program that might be even be a better fit. So in the case of something like, say, film or film studies, like there might be a program in another campus that might be better, but somebody might go to a more well-known sort of college. So how do you advise your students in terms of that? Like, would you tell them to go where the department is better or a better fit, or would you tell them to go to the bigger name?
Well, because of how competitive admission has become, I actually advise students as well as parents that cast a really wide net. Now, different people feel differently about prestige and a good fit. You know, some students tend, well, parents tend to focus on prestige. Depending on the parents and the students, sometimes having the right fit is more important. There's really no right answer to that. I think for students and parents who feel that prestige is more important, they understand that there are sacrifices to be made. Maybe it's not going to be the right program. Maybe the program wouldn't be as good as some of the other colleges. But I think in their minds, if the trade-off is worth it, then, hey, you know, good for them. So what I generally say is, well, you know, consider the prestige if that's important, but also look at the individual programs. So for film, for example, I can completely understand if a student tells me, well, I don't really care if the film program is not at Berkeley is not really about production. You know, it will be my dream to go to Berkeley. And I say, okay, that sounds good. That's fine. But, you know, go ahead and take a look at the film program at Santa Barbara because it's really good. Go ahead and take a look at the film program at UCLA because that is a very production-focused program. And there are San Diego, for example, has a visual arts program that is absolutely phenomenal that nobody really talks about, unfortunately.
San Diego is sort of considered the, after Berkeley and UCLA, kind of number three, right?
A lot of people feel that way, yes.
But then again, it depends on what ranking you're looking at. Like, for my sister went to UCSD Medical School, and that's considered like a top 10 in the country for medical school.
Yeah. So the ranking, you know, I tell everyone, take the ranking with a grain of salt, because it really depends on what it is that you want to do with your degree, what kind of degree program you're in. You know, I think ultimately the ranking sort of helps, you know, put some sort of order in chaos, because there are, I think, over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States. So I think it would be completely crazy to try to figure out which colleges do I want to go to, you know, looking at 4,000 different options. So rankings are sort of a good starting point to, you know, help students sort of figure out, do I want to go to a smaller college? Is liberal arts right for me? Do I want to go to a large, you know, research institution? But beyond that, I wouldn't get too hung up on, oh gosh, this is ranked 14. Maybe I want to go to the one that's ranked 12.
And actually, having the UC system for California residents or people who went to high school here, it's, if you're a decent enough student, it makes it a little easier because there is a lot of variety within the UC system, and it covers most of the state, and it, you can cover it all basically with this one application.
Yes, that's the best part about the UC system is you are applying to essentially any 9 campuses with just one application. But sometimes that can also be a little bit difficult too, because students may want to apply to different majors between the different campuses. So then it's a game of trying to figure out how do you address maybe very different majors within one application.
And do you need to do like the SAT-2 still, right? That's part of it?
No, actually, so the requirement has changed. The SAT subject exam is no longer required. What the students absolutely must have for the high school students is having the A through G requirements done. So your English, math, foreign language, laboratory science, visual and performing studies, social sciences, etc. All of that information is, of course, on the University of California website. And then the student must have either the SAT or the ACT plus writing. The SAT subject exam, which used to be known as the SAT-2, those are no longer required. However, for students who are interested in engineering programs, they are highly recommended. And, you know, I will translate that as you should probably have it. there is one exception, which students probably don't know. For students who are homeschooled, that's not a California accredited program, or if students are trying to apply to the University of California under what's considered admission by exception or admission by exam, those students are still required to take the SAT subject exam. And again, all of these requirements are available on the University of California website.
Okay, great. So let's transition this discussion a little, not just to UCs, but I think just generally You know, somebody's in high school, somebody's in community college, they want to transfer, they want to get into a good university. There's, you know, unprecedented application rates, plummeting admissions rates, like we've talked about. You know, like, what do you do? How do you navigate this system?
Okay, so I think for high school students, for example, well, actually, really, for anyone who are interested in applying to the University of California for the undergraduate program, this is probably true for the graduate program as well. Academic performance is king. There is really no substitute for good grades, rigorous curriculum. There are students sometimes misinterpret what that means. For example, I have students who come to me and say, I really don't want to take science, but I'm told that I need 4 years of science in order to be competitive for the UCs. And I say, no, there are minimal requirements and there are recommended requirements. So for example, laboratory science, the minimum requirement is 2 years and recommended 3 years. Students who are not particularly interested in science and don't intend on pursuing science in college, it's perfectly fine for them to meet the minimum requirement, possibly the recommended requirement, but then really focus their energy on what they care about. Mm-hmm. So if a student says, well, I'm very interested in history, then gosh, don't torture yourself with science, please.
Yeah.
You know, do the minimum, do the recommended if it's not going to require extraordinary amount of effort, and really focus on the student's interest. Perhaps a student wants to take more history courses. Typical high school offers U.S. history, world history, civics, government, and so forth. If the student feels like he or she wants more challenge, the student can go out to the California Community Colleges and take Canadian history or California history, and really broaden their horizon in the discipline that they're interested in.
And that shows, because that shows initiative outside of just this curriculum, because it's like, wow, this person's really interested in history. They're not just taking what they're given.
Exactly. So there is definitely, so the rigor will still be there, but at least the student is doing something he or she's interested in, rather than, you know, trying to fit into this formula of, oh gosh, everybody needs to have 4 years of science, which is absolutely not true.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard you use the term strategy before when it comes to this kind of planning. So would this be part of what you would consider strategy, which is tailoring your high school classes or community college classes towards this broader sense of what you want to do or how you want to brand yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So students who are interested in history, for example, so let's just talk about a student who is interested in history. So she may decide that she wants to, or in the case if I was working with her, I would recommend that, you know, that she really focus on taking history classes, both within her high school and also looking at outside opportunities, whether that's online high schools that offer maybe AP history classes or, you know, different types of history classes, or looking at community college courses and different types of history. Also, because that really provides a student with much better opportunity in terms of looking at specific periods of history, or, you know, specific history in particular regions or countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also advise the student then to really cater her extracurricular activities around history as well. So she might be looking at tutoring other students in history in school, or she may volunteer for a historical society in her neighborhood. So that in a sense, is really developing a strategy so that she can present a very clear path of following her interest. So that when she applies to the UC and she says, I want to study history, and in fact, I am very, very interested in history. This is what I can tell you that I've done with my life so far concerning history. I'm volunteering at a historical society to help preserve local history. I am tutoring other students in history because not only do I love history, I want other people to love history as well. And I am taking all of these history classes at the community colleges so that I have a good sense of perhaps what types of history I like to focus on when I start college.
And what you're describing sounds like a very motivated student versus I think a lot of students, even if they do extracurriculars, it might be just what their friends are doing or what they think is the right thing to do, whether it might be, you know, I think both of us work with a lot of maybe similar demographics where maybe they play piano or something, or they had some kind of upbringing that might have been similar culturally to other people around them.
Right.
But that doesn't make them distinct as candidates or applicants, right? Because they're just following into this larger trend. And when you're dealing with so many other people that, you know, so many applicants to these schools, you're not standing out in ways that you could be.
That's correct. So having a very focused pathway is one way to distinct yourself from other applicants, and also really showing motivation, showing a desire to make something of what you're doing.
Another term that comes to mind for me is leadership, because when you're talking about somebody who's tutoring people, somebody who's volunteering taking these steps, it sounds like there's something more, there's these leadership qualities that seem to come out in those cases.
Absolutely.
And colleges, not only does it say you're a good student, it says, you know, you'll make an impact on our campus. You might start a club at our campus. Or, you know, you'll start a business beyond and be very successful, or you'll invent something, and that just is going to make the college look good ultimately.
Yes, absolutely. So when students, and I say this to students a lot of the times, really understand why you are participating in these extracurricular activities. Why are you taking the classes you are taking? Now, minimum requirements and recommended requirements aside, you know, students really need to have a goal. Having a goal and understanding how to achieve that goal, which ultimately is what the colleges, any colleges, not just the UCs, are looking for. Students who understand where they want to go, what they want to do when they get there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very, very important. So one of the mistakes that students often make is, like you said, just doing extracurricular activities for the sake of doing extracurricular activities. And that lack of focus comes across loud and clear, unfortunately, to the detriment of the student. I have worked in the past with numerous students who spent 12, 13, 14 years playing the piano. They receive the certificate. I want to say CMS, but I don't remember what it stands for. And when I ask students, I say, what have you done with piano? They said, nothing. And I said, have you tried tutoring other students in piano? No. and I said, what do you plan to do with piano? Are you going to continue to play in college? And the answer is almost always no.
Yeah, that's like me and my sister both had piano lessons until 12th grade. And then I've played, you know, sat at a piano maybe 3 times since then. it's that kind of thing where, you know, I did have a specific goal in mind. Like, I wanted to go to film school. How does piano fit into that? It didn't. So, like, maybe that time could have been spent find if I couldn't find a club, starting a club. And you know, when I look back at these things I could have done, I see that there was almost like it wasn't an incongruent profile. It was just like, you know, I volunteered at the hospital. I wasn't interested in going into healthcare, but other people I knew were who were actually a lot of them were interested in that, were volunteering at the hospital. So it's like, oh, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I didn't have my heart in it. And my, when you see something like that on my application where it's like, okay, he's applying to this, and like, it doesn't mean as much as what the hours I spent at the hospital I thought it would have meant.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part, and some of that I think goes back to, educating parents about what it means to prepare for college. Parents sometimes are the driving force behind the piano lessons, the violin lessons, the hospital volunteering. And so it's really important, I think, for for parents to be able to take a step back and really look at what the student is interested in, what the student hopes to spend time on, and really develop that focus that is more in line with the student's interest.
I deal mostly, not exclusively, but mostly with graduate students, so I don't have to deal too much with this dynamic. But is it, do you encounter this a lot where, say, the student wants to major in dance or something very, maybe might not consider the most stable of paths, whereas the parents want them to do engineering or medicine? And, you know, how does that play out in your experience?
It plays out like most family dynamics. Whoever pays the bill gets the say, right? So, it's not uncommon for me to see students who say, "I want to apply to engineering," when it's obvious that engineering is not the interest. Generally, I try not to get involved in family politics. So it is an interesting dynamic that I have to handle from kind of day to day working with clients. But yeah, it's unfortunate, but I do see that a lot. Students who have a clear interest in something that may be considered less profitable, applying to programs that are more of a job guarantee.
Yeah, and I think a lot of both of our clients are probably Indian and Asian, and of these cultures where it's very pragmatic in the way these educational choices that you're supposed to make, at least in the maybe the older generation's way of looking at it.
Yeah, but I tell everyone this. I say, remember, well, no one remembers this, but I think this was back in the 80s. For a little while, engineering was not considered a job guarantee. Engineering, for short periods of time, sporadically, were not considered something that was going to guarantee a job. So I know right now everyone looks at engineering as sort of the, guaranteed meal ticket, but that may change. So I really sincerely tell all of the students and parents that pursuing something that you're interested in means you will always enjoy what you do. And you will make, the money will happen if you really care about what you're doing. So I think trying to pursue a discipline because it's supposed to have jobs available is doing it backwards. But
I mean, there's a
not everyone
limit.
believes
Like,
in
you
that.
know, you can't just have some random, you know, somebody be like, oh, but I want to be in the NBA and they're 5 foot tall.
That is true. But I think, within reason, pursue what you're interested in, and Because it's also difficult. I've had parents who ask me, like, what do you think is going to happen in 10 years? Where do you think the jobs will be? And I say, hey, 5 years ago, none of us could have saw that everyone's going to have a smartphone and that everyone's going to browse the internet on mobile. Right? Mobile platform was not a thing even 6 or 7 years ago. So I said, for all we know, in the next 2 years, we're going to discover the fourth dimension, and everybody's going to study that. So, I mean, gosh, like, how could you even predict something like that?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So, it is go with what your heart desires, and the money will follow. That's what I believe in.
Okay. Other than the NBA caveat.
Yeah, that one I can't really do anything about.
Fair enough. Okay, so we were talking about just the general strategy, which is, it reminds me a little of this basically storytelling, which is creating like a very stronger impression of almost like, this is who I am as a character, these are the things I've done. And one of the storytelling thing, or one of the screenwriting things that I've learned is, or practices, action equals character. So rather than, sometimes people will save, this is who I am and this is what I'm about for the essay, or say some schools will have interviews, but if you haven't demonstrated it in your activities and in the classes you've taken, it only carries so much weight.
It doesn't carry any weight at all, quite frankly. I think a lot of the times students fall into the trap of saying and not showing. And particularly for the application, it's really important, and the essay, of course, to be able to demonstrate what the student has been doing, how the student has been successful, how the student anticipate to be successful in the future. And that's very, very important. And I tell students this. I say, if I tell you I work very hard, that doesn't really mean anything. But if I say I work very hard, I get up at 6 in the morning and I get on my blog and I write a blog post and then I talk to students.
We can see it. We can go to your blog and see that you've done that.
Right. So being able to come up with concrete examples of how I've been working hard is going to be much more convincing than just me telling someone that I work hard.
Yeah. And what you're saying is the essay shouldn't be, you shouldn't put all this pressure on the essay to convince people that you're awesome and you're going to be successful. Like, the essay needs to be, it almost needs to link all these other things together as, like, it's a good way to express yourself, but it needs to sort of carry through with a theme that's already been established elsewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, the essay is really a culmination of everything that the student should have been doing all along, whether that's pursuing one particular interest, whether that's preparing for, so engineering as an example, the student really need to spend 4 years of high school preparing for that. So when the essay comes along, it's not that the student is going to use the essay to convince everyone that he's ready for engineering.
Even the best
But,
essay in the world is only going to have so much impact.
right, the essay is really going to be the culmination of 4 years of work together.
And a lot of times people, they'll procrastinate and then the essay becomes a desperate measure of like, I don't have anything to show for my anything, but the which is, I think there's some truth to that. If you have, if you can drastically improve your application in one day, the essay is the place to do it. But ideally, you don't want to get to that point.
Yeah, and it's difficult, I think, to convey really 4 years of work coherently in a 1,000 word, two-part essay in one day. I think the student is really shortchanging him or herself by doing that.
So let's actually talk specifically about the essay. So, that's kind of the area we have a bit of overlap. So, as people know that I have a little bit more of an international and graduate school orientation, though not exclusively, and you deal with specifically UC admissions, mostly from California residents, but probably also other parts of the country. So I'm curious to hear what your advice would be specific to what you do and how that might differ from what I look for in a essay.
So when students come to me, most of the time they're, you know, in their senior year, they're getting ready to apply. So, you know, the strategy development aspect is a little bit different. So what I do then is really having the student come to me, bring sort of everything that they have, whatever that might be, you know, from all 4 years. What I do is really doing analysis of, you know, what are the student's interests? What has the student done with that interest? You know, what are some of the peripheral types of activities or academic pursuits there are? And then from what the student brings to me, I help the student develop a coherent message. So it's basically trying to, you know, so it's basically doing a strategy backwards. And then from that message, you know, the student moves forward with writing the essay and making sure the essay delivers that message loud and clear.
So what elements are you looking for? I mean, other than the, you know, taking action and showing that you have initiative kind of throughout high school?
Well, the UCs are very sort of, I don't know if I don't know if meat and potatoes is quite the right way to describe them, but you know, they're not really looking for fancy writing. They're not really looking for, you know, crazy creative types. I mean, there are some exceptions, of course, you know, if you're applying to the UCLA film program and so forth, or that's a completely different can of worms.
Would that apply if you were for the main UC essays as well, or would that only apply for the supplemental material?
For majority of the students who are just applying to regular admission that, you know, don't have any supplemental materials, really being straightforward and being matter of fact is the way to go. I generally don't recommend trying to be hilarious or super creative or, you know, sound like an 18th century poet. It doesn't do them justice, because 1,000 words is not a lot. It's about a page and a half, a little over, single space. So students need to really use the space wisely, mm-hmm. to really focus on their message and really be able to demonstrate, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to say.
And this in contrast with, say, a Common App essay.
Yes. And this kind of, this goes back to what we talked about earlier in terms of the number of applications that the UCs receive. UCLA, you know, year after year, get the greatest number of applications. Now, they get pretty close. They got pretty close to, they got pretty close to 90,000. I don't think it quite broke 90, but it was pretty close to 90,000. And this is,
I hope they have more than a couple of people having to read this. What if one person had to read all this?
Fortunately, they don't.
I think that's actually impossible.
It's not a good idea for one person to do this. But so that's 90,000 applications just for high school seniors who are applying. That number did not include transfer applicants
or any graduate department.
Right. So, they have external readers that they hire, and everybody's trained, everyone understands what they need to do. It's a fair process to the extent that they can make it fair. But really it comes down to how many essays do these people have to read? And so, and just imagine, if you thought talking about your grandmother was,
There's
a very unique
tens of
perspective.
thousands of grandmas involved in this process, if you
So really, don't try to game the system. Don't try to, come up with some unique way of expressing yourself. Whatever you're thinking that you think is unique, someone's tried it 10,000 times. So really focus on what's unique about you, the student, right? Because, and I tell the students this, I go, how many high schools do you think there are in California? Do you realize almost every single high school have a tennis captain? And so it's not about being the tennis captain, but it's about you being the tennis captain and what you've done, what you've learned through that process, and what you've done with that position, and what, so it's your personal experience that makes it unique.
It's
It's
the
not about
internal, it's not the external.
exactly.
And that's something that very much gets lost in a lot of essays I see, where it becomes about, I did this, I did this, I like this, this is, I got good grades. And it's not about, it's not about their character, it's not about transformation. And that's one of the things that I really practice in my essay tutoring, is this idea of transformation. It's like, you had a specific point of view or way of looking at things that kind of got challenged, and you grew as a result.
Absolutely. And that's actually really important for most college admission essays, not just the UCs. But I think what students find difficult with that is they have not been taught how to reflect on their own thoughts up until this point.
It's almost unfair, right? It's not really academic. It's more like it's an assignment that they have had no preparation for, yet it's probably the most important thing they'll ever have to write in a lot of cases.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, and it is somewhat unfortunate. Now, I do see students who sort of intuitively understood what they had to do and they do it. But it's not a conscious process, and I think a lot of the students, when they try to figure out what they're supposed to do, there's really no figuring out because it's not something that they ever had to do before.
And I also noticed that a lot of times they get feedback from people around them that just are not, they
Not
don't,
helpful.
or yeah, they don't have experience, looking at thousands or even hundreds of admissions essays. So they're going to be like, oh, wow, you wrote an essay. It's great. There's not, the objectivity is going to go out the window unless you're giving it to somebody who's maybe an English teacher or something like that. But in their sort of normal day-to-day existence, the people that potentially they give the essay to are just totally unqualified to give a proper critique of what they've read.
That's very true. And I'm gonna have to disagree with you on the English teacher part because English teachers tend to correct the grammar. I don't know about
It's
the
too
reflection.
superficial. See, I don't work with too many undergrad applicants, so I just assume English teachers know what's up, but I guess not.
I think in English classes, students tend to, there are very specific essay writing techniques that they learn, argumentative and, compare and contrast. But students very rarely are asked to write about themselves, right?
In
Everyone
fact, in a lot of
remembers.
classes, you're actively discouraged from using the first person.
Absolutely. And it's such a huge change when you're writing college essays that, you know, wait, I'm supposed to put the word I in it? Like, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the students I work with are, you know, come from India and they have an engineering background. So I think that discomfort with this process is times three or times 10, where it's just like they really are out of their element. And, but, you know, in every case, once I really work with them and sit down and say, like, all right, this is what it needs to be, they feel very empowered. And they it's actually a fun and enjoyable process getting out these innermost thoughts or these, you know, like really exploring what they're all about. And I've never had an experience where at the end of it, they were like, man, that was horrible, or that was a painful process. It's actually what's painful is doing it the wrong way.
I agree. And, you know, many, many of my clients have come back to me and said, you know, I learned a lot about myself, you know, through this process. And that's what I hope to accomplish with all of my clients, really.
We're basically like therapists, right?
Yeah, it feels that way sometimes, you know. So a lot of times it's about kind of pulling the student out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So because, like, they're always living their life. So part of what you and I do is really pulling them out so they can look in on their own life.
And there's not a natural mechanism for not even them, almost everybody in their daily lives. So it's like having somebody in their life like us who's just puts the spotlight on them, and it's like, no, this isn't good enough. Like, you have to get deeper here. And they're finally forced to confront some interesting things about, like, what makes them tick.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's really when the essays start to get good, I think.
Yes, I agree.
So is there any other aspects of the process that you feel like we should cover, whether it be, say, test taking for the SAT or extracurriculars or anything like that?
Well, there are enough test prep companies out there. I don't think I need to cover that. What I will say about test prep, though, is I don't think a lot of people know this, but almost all of the test prep companies will let the students sit in on a class for free. All you have to do is ask. And what people don't realize is the test prep companies, their strategies tend to be similar, but they teach them differently. And so it's really important for students to find a teaching style that works for them.
So if you can go to each test prep company and get a free class, and then there's 50 test prep companies, that's 50 free lessons.
Right? Well, that's one way to do it.
So they have no excuse for not acing the SAT.
Absolutely.
They could have zero money and still get a perfect score in the SAT with this kind of information that we're providing for them.
Yeah. So everyone out there, you have no excuse now. You have to get a perfect score.
And I think, you know, we've got a really good sense of the way you approach the admissions process. I'd like to sort of know a little bit more about exactly this kind of services you offer. So you've talked about transfer students. You've talked about undergrad. It sounds like you tend to work a little more long term. Is that the rule, or is it flexible in terms of, well, you know, so what if somebody only has a week to prepare? So can you get a little more specific into, you know, what we can expect working with Ms. Sun?
Absolutely. So kind of the most popular service that I offer is really the UC application, UC personal statement service. And that is the one where students sign up as they start senior year. I'm sure most people know by now that the UC application comes online August 1st. It used to come online much later in the process, but it's going to start August 1st. And so a lot of the students sign up during that time, and I work with the student all through I guess, the end of the summer through school starting, and the application is due November 30th. And depending on what the student signs up for, I offer different levels of services. I will work with the student essentially through all the rest of it. A lot of people have the misconception that, you know, once the application is out the door, like, you know, everything is done. And that's actually not entirely accurate. With the UCs in particular, there is an application audit process that happens December. With the transfer students, they have an academic update that they need to file in January. Some of the students who are applying to programs that have supplemental applications, those tend to happen between November and January. And then, you know, if for some reason the student ends up on the wait list, some of the campuses require a wait list statement. You know, and I also work with students when necessary to appeal if they're not satisfied with their admission decision. So all of this tend to happen during senior year, and that is the bulk of my service. I also work with students who are interested in kind of looking at how they're preparing for college. So this might be students or parents of students who are in 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, you know, just wanting to get an idea of how to focus their efforts so that they're getting the most.
Focusing the efforts for UCs will help them beyond that as well in terms of other applications.
Absolutely, because, you know, what we talked about earlier about having a really coherent, strong message, about having a focused effort in developing certain areas, that is going to come across for all of the colleges, you know, that because that effort is going to help the students stand out. And that standing out is what's going to make them competitive for college admission.
Universally. That's very interesting in that ultimately colleges are looking for the same thing.
Right. They're looking for students who are unique, right? And everybody is unique in their own way.
Some just seem to not want to own up to that or to pursue their uniqueness. And there's some comfort in conformity sometimes.
Yeah, so it's up to people like us to pull it out of them.
To make the world a little more interesting, one
yes.
client at a time. So, yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Absolutely.
I don't know who us is, I meant me. So, your website is askmisssun.com, and
yes.
You also have a blog, is that... Oh, that's on the website.
Yes, that is on the website.
And then you have was it Ask?
I was on Ask FM for a while, but I stopped doing that because it's quite chaotic up there. There are some controversies about cyberbullying, and I'm no longer on Ask FM, unfortunately.
You became a cyberbully and they kicked you out, is that what I'm hearing?
Actually, no, I was the victim of cyberbullying.
Are you serious?
I am, but...
I don't know much about Ask FM, but isn't what I've seen, it seems like it's kids in high school who answer dumb questions posed to them.
That's about the gist of it.
There was only one source of intelligence in all of Ask FM, and now it's gone.
Well, that's okay. I mean, students and parents can still find me on my blog and my website, and everyone is always welcome to post questions
on your website or on your Facebook.
Yeah. So, you know, for the blog, the comments are public, so anyone can see it. However, students certainly take advantage of private messaging me through Facebook, and I will always answer.
That's great. And, you know, from what I can tell, it's just such a, as great as the UC system is, it's such a massive entity that has so many quirks and so many rules and idiosyncrasies that there's not, you know, the definitive guide to applying to the UC handbook that exists. So, well, there is, it's you. And so it's a tremendous resource for people who really want to get into one of these schools to have that, to have you be able to help them through this process.
And I really enjoy doing it too. So, and you know, I'm always happy to answer questions. Like I said, feel free to get in touch with me through my blog or Facebook. I'm always happy to answer questions.
So once again, thank you, Ms. Sun.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Not anytime. So maybe later in a few months, we can have you on to talk about some other aspect of the admissions process or the UC schools.
I'd be happy to.
Great. We'll talk to you then.
Alrighty.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.